Welcome to Microbrew, Milwaukee Brewers Chatter from the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. My name is J.R. Radcliffe, host of the show, and on the other line is Brewers reporter Todd Rosiak of the Milwaukee Journal Sentinel. And do we have some stuff to discuss this week. It was a bad week, a bad, very, very bad week for the Milwaukee Brewers. They go 1-5 against two teams, the Pirates and the Reds, that they've really beaten up on this year, that they probably should be beating up on a little bit more than they did. They have fallen out of a playoff spot. If the season ended today, they would not be in the playoffs. They are a game and a half out of the nearest playoff spot, two games out in the NL Central. And all of this is happening in the shadow of the very controversial Josh Hader trade that kicked off the week. I do want to say real quick before we go too deep into that, because that is what we're going to be spending the majority of the time on. I did get a chance to catch up with Taylor Rogers, who is one of the guys who came back in that Josh Hader trade, of course. New member of the Milwaukee Brewers bullpen. Chatted with him a little bit before Saturday's game. I know people probably aren't terribly fond of the deal in general, and maybe they just don't want to talk about it anymore or think about it anymore, but I did want to get to know him a little bit, and so that'll be at the end of this podcast. But Todd, we got to start with further examination of this deal, its ripple effects. There have been some twists and turns since Kurt and I did an emergency podcast on Monday. The big thing, you got a chance to speak with David Stearns and Mark Adonazio on Friday at American Family Field. They addressed some of the many concerns that Brewers fans and maybe even some of the players have following that trade. So I just want to start there, start in a broad sense. That was a really long conversation and a really long piece on jsonline.com. What were some of the big takeaways that you had? What were some of the highlights of those conversations that you had with members of the Brewers front office?
I guess the first thing I would say is the Brewers, the front office, Mark Adonazio, David Stearns, they understand the frustration. They understand the head scratching and, the angst as to why fans are so upset and why they can't figure out the trade. They put that piece forward initially right away. And the other part of it, and this that part fans are not accepting. The other part that I have seen on social media that fans aren't accepting is the piece that, this was not a cost cutting deal. People just don't don't buy that. I can't force these guys to tell you as fans what you want to hear. There's only so many ways we can ask a question, and believe me, these questions were asked repeatedly, and we can't force guys to answer them in the manner that everybody wants. So bottom line is from everything that we've been told, it's not a cost-cutting measure. This is a trade that was made with an eye on trying to help the Brewers this year, but just as importantly, trying to keep them competitive in the coming years. And Josh Hader, as good as he is, as good as he was for the Brewers, as good as he is, the Brewers feel like they got another guy in Taylor Rogers who is very similar to Josh Hader. He's not Josh Hader, we all know that, but he is also a hard-throwing left-hander with a similar repertoire who has 28 saves. This guy is not, this is not chopped liver that they traded for here in Taylor Rogers, let's be clear. Yes, he lost the closer's job in San Diego prior to coming to Milwaukee, but this is a guy with a pretty good body of work. And I would argue with the other moves that were made, in addition, bringing over Matt Bush, the Trevor Rosenthal part of that deal is still kind of up in the air. But I would argue that the Brewers' bullpen is deeper overall. I would argue that the Brewers' bullpen is more versatile and flexible overall. Not good week, yes, as you mentioned. The bullpen did not have a good week either. But I think over the long, the rest of the season, I think Craig Counsell has more ways to deploy that bullpen and more effective ways to deploy that bullpen. Does it help the Brewers win the World Series this year? That's you guys can determine that. I the Brewers think that they still have every shot at doing so. So that, it is what it is. I'm just kind of going point by point here. So if I'm rambling, stop me. But, you know, why was Hader traded now instead of the offseason? That was another part that we talked about in the story. And quite simply, David Stearns believed that trading him at this point, the Brewers were going to be able to get more for him than if they would have traded him in the offseason, bottom line. You know, how does this affect the clubhouse? How does it affect Hader's teammates and friends? Yeah, it definitely affected them for sure. But on the flip side, these guys are also professionals. Almost all of them have been traded themselves or have gone through periods where they've lost teammates, close friends to trades. It is what it is. I mean, you have to get over that shock because you're getting paid to play a game and to win games. And, you know, that excuse maybe flies the day after he was traded. But beyond that, you got to move on. You know, you got to do your job and you got to worry about helping the Brewers win. So, you know, I've never seen, and this is my 12th year covering the Brewers, never seen this much outcry before publicly, never seen this much vitriol from fans and from people who watch the team and follow the team and root for the team. It's been pretty eye-opening, and I know the Brewers were expecting that to a certain extent. I think maybe it's even surprised them with how vocal and how long it's lasted. So, you know, it's been a crazy week. I will go back. I was kind of thinking about some other angles to this trade. I will go back to the San Francisco series when Josh Hader gave up the 6 runs in the 9th inning, and the Giants walked off the Brewers at Oracle Park. And all the tweets I got and all the emails I got about how could the Brewers keep Josh Hader as a closer? This guy's terrible. Not get rid of him necessarily, but they got to take him out of the closer's job. I mean, he's killing the Brewers. Remember that?
Yes. I mean,
Do you remember back when very early in the season when Devin Williams had a couple of shaky appearances? I got a lot of tweets, a lot of emails. Oh my, what are the Brewers doing? Devin Williams, he's too immature. He's not a good pitcher. They have to send him down. They got to send him down to the minors. He's got to get straightened out. So, yeah, I mean, my point being, people are very reactionary. People, you know, fans get very caught up in the moment. So this, you know, the Hader thing, we're talking about 3 weeks ago that people were ready to punt him and kick him out of the closer's job. And now it's the end of the world. So, yeah, I mean, the guy was tremendous by all accounts, tremendous teammate. He's a great guy. You know, he really bounced back from the All-Star thing, you know, with the tweets and everything. That's really water under the bridge, and credit to him for handling it the way that he did, falling on the sword, taking the blame for it, doing what needed to be done to pay a penance and moving on. And the fans, by and large, forgave him for it. So I'll be very interested to see how Josh Hader does in San Diego. There's no reason to think that, you know, he will implode or something like that. But I think maybe part of the unspoken part of this trade was the Brewers were indeed a little nervous about the way he had been pitching of late. That walk-off in Minnesota, followed by the walk-off in San Francisco. You know, he bounced back in the several appearances he made post All-Star break, but still did not quite look like the Josh Hader of old. I think maybe that scared him a little bit too. So a lot of things we talked about here, a lot of angles, a lot of reasons for why they did what they did. Let's see how it plays out now. That's all we can do.
Yeah, we've been led to believe that sample size is really key in baseball. And I think rightfully, and certainly front offices think that way, you know, media think that way. If you get that sort of blowback about Josh Hader having a bad week in San Francisco, it really was a whole bad month of July. But that's not that big of a sample. And yet, I think what you're saying is kind of true. I can't shake from reading between the lines, trying to ascertain what the Brewers are thinking, that they really do believe that Josh Hader is going to be the dominant Josh Hader we've come to know going forward. You know, I don't know if they truly believe that if Josh Hader is still what he is at the beginning of the year, I don't know if they make that deal in the middle of a season. And I truly, like you said earlier, I truly don't believe it's about the money. Josh Hader was already expensive. If they wanted to avoid paying a closer double-digit million a year, they would have traded him before this season. Adding a few extra million on top of that, I don't think is a deal breaker. But I have to wonder if they already don't think he's worth double-digit million going forward, that they don't think that he's going to be that arm anymore, that they're worried about his effectiveness. Maybe it has something to do with his preference for those single-inning roles. We've talked about that before, how he likes to be in save situations or tie games. But maybe there's something there where they just doubt that Josh Hader is going to be this good going forward. And it's a tough thing. You can't just come out and say that, because you can't say that to the fans. You can't say that to the players even. You can't say it to the San Diego Padres. You know, that has to be something that you have to keep close to the vest. And I just wonder if that's their internal evaluation. Do you get any, you must get some sense of that from what you're saying here.
Yeah. I mean, and again, you're right. They can't come out and say that. They won't come out and say that, but that's me kind of reading between the lines here. I really do think that they were maybe a little bit spooked by what had been going on. It wasn't just a one game thing. And in fairness to Hader, he had rough patches before that he'd bounced out of, but not one that I can recall being as lengthy and protracted as that. And I'm interested too, because I saw something about how Hader said the day after the trade when he was in San Diego that he was tipping pitches and that sort of thing. I mean, time will tell. Let's see how he does in San Diego. But that's one of the most obvious first things that any coaching staff and any catcher, anybody involved with a pitcher on a team would look into is tipping pitches. That's a very basic response to it. So I have a hard time believing that the Brewers hadn't thought about that first. It's just really. When we look back at this year and look back at stories about the Brewers here in the last few years, it's really an earth-shattering move in a lot of ways, and I don't think it can be overplayed in any way. But I will be very interested to see how Taylor Rogers does the rest of the season. Maybe they'll be interested in bringing him back. Maybe they can bring him back for a reasonable sum. I would imagine other teams will be in on him. That's obviously speaking toward the future. The other part of the trade is the prospects that they got, and everything that David Stearns told us, they love the two guys that they got. Esteri Ruiz, he was just had an insane first half, gives the Brewers quite a different look in the outfield from a lot of guys that they do have, these prospects coming up, and that he's freak athlete, extremely fast. He's got some power developing in his game. He can play across all three spots. It's going to be a very interesting outfield. It is a very interesting outfield in Nashville right now, and I have a feeling we'll talk about that in a little bit anyway. Robert Gasser, the other guy that they got, the left-hander, was a guy that they had targeted in the draft last year, and they wind up with him. So you take him, you take Russell Smith, another left-hander they got in the second round last year. They're adding some pieces to the minor league system, some high ceiling pitchers, and Gasser is quite a bit further along in the pipeline than Russell Smith is, to the point where maybe Gasser factors in at some point toward the end or middle of next season even. He's already at Biloxi, pitched well in his first start down there on Saturday. Yeah, I mean, a lot of moving parts with this deal, but let's just remember that don't shoot the messenger here, right? I didn't have anything to do with this trade. Adam McAlvey didn't have anything to do with this trade. Kurt Hoag didn't have anything to do with this trade. We're just trying to get the information and get it out to you guys. So, thank you for remembering.
I really do think you're right. It comes down to the Brewers loving those two prospects. They David Stearns made a point of how they followed him. They followed these guys since long before now, and that these are two guys that they truly, truly coveted. And so there was a twist. There was a twist shortly after the trade was made. Denilson Lamet, who was on the roster for a day as a reliever, a guy who had struggled recently, but you thought maybe he'd be a reclamation project. The Brewers have had a lot of success with that. They designated for assignment. It's leading everyone to believe that Labette was never really part of the plan. He was going to be a guy that maybe if they didn't get anybody else, they'd keep on the roster. But they were very quick to cut ties with him. He's now a Colorado Rocky. So the trade has gone from four players, including two major leaguers, to the two prospects and one guy, Taylor Rogers, you mentioned, very good and comparable to Josh Hader's season. But also, I think, you know, everyone understands he's a free agent after this year. He's kind of the replacement for Hader for now. He's a stopgap is probably unkind for somebody of his caliber, but that's essentially what we're talking about. So if they were to instead have made this trade in the offseason, when you know, they've played out the 2022 season, the postseason, it would essentially be for two prospects. And that's the thing that I'm kind of hung up on, and I can understand why fans are frustrated about. It's a little hard to sell that they wouldn't have been able to make this trade in the offseason and get two prospects of this caliber, if not these exact two guys who are, you know, high-level AAA, AA players, but not top 100 guys. Neither of these two are top 100 guys. I know those lists are subjective, and these guys have different evaluations, and the Brewers obviously covet them a lot more than the average than the average list maker does. But that's tough. You know, it's a lot of pressure for one thing on these two guys to fulfill that, become everyday regular Major League Baseball players. And moreover, David Stearns indicated that the Padres reached out to them, that they didn't make an outgoing call. So this deal essentially had to have blown them away. And I don't, it's hard for me to imagine that they couldn't have found something of similar caliber in the offseason. And never mind the fact that the Padres are now the team that the Brewers are chasing for that last playoff spot. They're a game and a half ahead of them. Padres got really loaded up here. And one of their new additions is Josh Hader. So there's also that element to consider. I don't know. I'm starting to ramble too, but you know, I guess we just have to, I think it just comes down to the fundamental acceptance that they love these prospects so much that they did not think they would have a chance to get two players of this caliber again if they were to wait until the offseason. Does that sound right to you?
Yeah, I mean, I think that's probably a pretty accurate portrayal. You know, they're setting themselves up for the future, but they also feel internally, you know, and this goes back to the part we were talking about at the start, was they feel internally that Taylor Rogers is not going to be a marked Taylor Rogers is going to give them as good a chance to win games moving forward as Josh Hader did this year. Now, you know, whether the fans believe that or not, I would assume most of them do not, but that's the sense that I got from that trade and I'm taking away from that trade. So again, only time will tell. That's why David Stearns makes the big bucks. I would argue that David Stearns has earned the benefit of the doubt, because more often than not, the moves that he's made for the Milwaukee Brewers have turned out. Let's wait and see. You know, if the Brewers don't make the playoffs, I think that could be a very good reason, one of the very good reasons why they don't. If the Brewers do make the playoffs and wind up facing the San Diego Padres, I mean, talk about the storylines there. That would be incredible. So it's setting up what should be a really interesting last couple months here for the Brewers, for sure.
Yeah, and to be clear, if things continue to play out as they do now, it's either the Brewers battling with the Padres for that last playoff spot, or perhaps the Padres get that last wild card, Brewers win the division, then they absolutely are going to be matching up. A lot of games left, but it's a very real possibility that the Padres and the Brewers are in some way, shape, or form fighting with each other for playoff positioning or in a playoff series. Okay, the other big aspect of this is the clubhouse. And I know you didn't travel to Pittsburgh, but one of the big takeaways from the Pittsburgh series was that first interview with Devin Williams, who we all know stands to gain, at least statistically, from not having Josh Hader in the clubhouse anymore. He's now the closer, gets the save opportunities. And Devin Williams was pretty upset. And this was 24 hours after the trade. He's had a chance to absorb it. Either he is really upset or he wants people to know that he's upset. And that seemed to raise some red flags. You know, there was a comment made that made it sound like David Stearns or someone in the Brewers organization had spoken to the clubhouse, given them some sense of sort of what the team's direction was and that everybody was kind of on board with it. But then, you know, you had the Williams interview and maybe just a couple other comments that suggested to me, you know, they were taken by surprise as much as anybody here and maybe even a little bit rattled. I don't know. Like, I always get I bristle a little when people say distractions can cause teams to play poorly in baseball. I just don't think it's that type of game at this level with the concentration required for the batter pitcher matchup. I just don't see it. It's my personal preference, my personal view. But you know, what's your thought on that? That this trade caught everybody by surprise and is frustrating enough that it could impact the play on the field.
Yeah, I mean, I just guess I'll just echo what I had said previously. You understand the human element. You know, Josh Hader's Corbin Burns' best friend, and you know, he got close to a lot of these guys on the team. Understandably so, a lot of these guys came through the system together. But I think you give him a little bit of leeway, a little bit of a pass in the short term because it's a shock. But you got to move on. You got to move on. And Devin Williams, you know, it was very surprising to me from the standpoint of, okay, you feel bad that you lost a friend, that you lost a teammate to another team, but wouldn't you show some excitement and some enthusiasm about, like, hey, now I'm the closer or the potential closer? You know, I asked him that question in spring training. I said, whenever Josh Hader moves on, are you looking forward to being potentially the closer for this team? And he said, absolutely. That's what every guy in my position wants to do. Well, here you go. You got the chance now. And it was just kind of eye-opening that did not come across in the interview, really. You know, it's easy for me to put myself in somebody's shoes because I'm not that person, clearly. But you know, say, yeah, well, you know, we're going to miss Josh Hader. He was a big part of this team, but I'm looking forward to, you know, maybe stepping into his shoes and filling his role and doing my best to continue to pitch as well as I have. And maybe, you know, maybe the Brewers and won't miss Josh as much, you know, something to that effect. But I will just say that interview did not come across real well to anybody, I don't think, you know, and I think maybe the Brewers' eyes were open a little bit to the front office by what he had to say and how that came across. But, you know, he's entitled to it. He's an emotional guy. He's a guy who wears his heart on his sleeve. And then he goes out and gives up a walk-off home run the first time he has an opportunity to close. It was just the kind of the way the week transpired, followed suit there. And things could not have gone any worse across the board. I mean, it really, really was kind of head scratching and it makes you shake your head and everything else. It was, if you wrote a script, could not have followed a worse script than what everything that has transpired here over the last week.
Yeah. There's so much serendipity. There's the Narvaez injury the day after they DFA their catcher, which I'll mention that later. There's Josh Hader getting a win in his first appearance with San Diego and Trent Grisham, former Brewer, hitting a walk-off home run. There's just all of it. I mean, two walk-off losses and leads in all three of those games in Pittsburgh, 4-0, 3-0, you know, 3-1, and then a lead in extras. I mean, it's just all of it. So, part of what makes this trade tougher, I think really one of the biggest things, is that there the other moves or non-moves that were made at the trade deadline, you know, anyone looking at the Brewers, really the previous week before the trade deadline might have been an exception, but anyone prior to that would have told you that the offense is what needs upgrading, particularly center field, maybe third base. You know, there are a couple places. You know, they struggle against left-handed pitching. That's a team-wide thing. They have not seemingly improved from the team offensively last year that ran into a wall when they got to the playoffs. And, you know, I was surprised that there was no upgrade on offense, even a little one. Every year they have found someone at the trade deadline who to help them offensively. You know, they did get Ruiz, and that's probably a AAA guy for now, and maybe he impacts the big league team this year as part of that Hader trade, but that wasn't really what he was brought here for right away. David Stern said he just didn't like the price tags on some of those bats. A lot of those guys didn't even change teams. You know, Ramon Laureano and Cedric Mullins are center fielders who didn't change teams. It just seems like if the team, you know, for a fan, they stripped away one of their strengths in the bullpen. If you believe that Josh Hader is markedly better than Taylor Rogers, that means that they pulled away from one of their strengths, and you would think that they would use the capital there to upgrade in one of their weaknesses, which would be the offense. And that just didn't happen. Do you think the Brewers maybe just really are comfortable with this offense, or do you think that this was a major missed opportunity for them?
I think they like the balance of the lineup. You know, that's something that David Stearns continued to bring up, was the balance. I feel like they feel like that, you know, there's still some untapped potential there. The offense has shown the capability of being a more productive offense. Coming out of the All-Star break, they had that stretch where they were able to manufacture runs pretty regularly without relying on the home run. That has gone away over the last several games, the series against Cincinnati. But I think in the bottom line is that my guess again would be that the price tag for acquiring some of these bats. And I'll just come out and say, the guy that I thought for sure was going to wind up in a Brewer uniform was Jock Peterson. That would have been a terrific fit in so many ways. It just tells me that the Giants were asking way too much. I'm sure the Brewers were in on some other guys. My guess is that those teams were asking way too much for what they had to offer. And David Stearns, was not going to give up an Ethan Small or, I'm just throwing names out there, a Sal Frelick for somebody who's going to be a rental bat for the rest of the season, or a guy, who maybe has one more year of control after this year. It wasn't going to help the Brewers in that, to stay competitive mode over the long term, because as we all know, a small market team needs to control its own players and build its own pipeline. And, the Brewers are still firmly in the throes of that, trying to rebuild that minor league system. It's much better than it was a few years ago, but still a ways to go yet. So it is what it is. The Brewers have the guys that they have, and we'll see if they can become a more consistent unit for longer stretches here. The series against Cincinnati definitely did not build any confidence in that area. And this coming week is going to be a challenge as well. Tampa always has a really good pitching staff. And then you've got the Cardinals, who are just coming off a sweep of the New York Yankees, which is incredible. So we'll see how it goes. But they're definitely going to have to be able to start manufacturing runs on a more consistent basis to keep themselves in games.
Cardinals have won 9 of 10. It just blows my mind that last week, the last time we podcasted, it was a very good week for the Brewers. The Brewers were riding high. The offense had figured it out. And a week later, I'm looking at that Cardinals series and wondering, is that going to be the end point of the season? Like if they get swept in that series, the NL Central might be at almost curtains, not mathematically, but it could go very bad. They've really reached sort of this crisis point just 1 week later. So what the Brewers did do at the deadline was add Matt Busch, a reliever from Texas, who, again, part of this serendipity week, he had two rough outings. He spiked a wild pitch that brought in the winning run in extra innings against the Pirates to cap the sweep out in Pittsburgh. And they also traded for Trevor Rosenthal, who is injured, and he just signed with San Francisco late in July. He probably could have just been signed by anybody. He hasn't pitched in the big league since 2020, and he's got a hamstring issue that's going to keep him out until the end of the month. I mean, obviously, there's some track record there with Trevor Rosenthal. The Brewers did give up some decent prospects, I would say, to get those guys. Not can't miss guys, but Antoine Kelly is a left-hander who throws hard. He's coming off Tommy John surgery, but was promising. And Tristan Peters is really having one of the best years in the minors of anybody in the Brewers system. So those guys get given up in those deals. Busch had very good numbers. A lot of people know he's got a pretty checkered past, so that's kind of simmering in the background as well. Although he's had a lot of years where he's seemingly moved on from that and improved himself. And Rosenthal, I guess, is just the biggest puzzle to me, because even if they really are in the process of trying to make this bullpen better holistically, even though they subtract Josh Hader, this is a guy who's only going to be able to give you a month, maybe, if he comes back from the hamstring. And even if he does, he still hasn't pitched in the big leagues in 2 years. So that's, I think, a pretty big gamble. I guess I'm still looking at this bullpen and seeing they subtracted one difference maker. And if you believe Taylor Rogers is almost a match, that's fine. But then, I don't know, like these seem more like risks. Matt Busch is having a great year, but I guess I don't know. I'm still trying to figure out if they really did improve their bullpen. But from what you're saying earlier, you think these moves really do solidify this bullpen, and you really can't argue that they're better than they were before the trade deadline as a unit.
Yeah, I just like the versatility and the flexibility more. As we all saw, and another thing that fans complained about consistently was Josh Hader only pitched in save situations. Josh Hader only pitched the ninth inning. You don't have that anymore. Devin Williams has got the initial cracks, but I think you're going to occasionally see Taylor Rogers in the ninth inning, depending on matchups. And as we all know, that's one of Craig Counsell's strengths, is working matchups. Matt Busch is a guy who can pitch in high leverage situations. Trevor Rosenthal, it's the wild card. Is he going to be able to come back at all? When he does, what role is he going to be in? Is he going to be able to stay healthy? All things being equal, if the guy comes back, he stays healthy, and he pitches effectively, that's another nice add-on right there. That's another nice piece, a hard thrower with prior closing experience, an all-star, multiple-time all-star, although it was a while ago. You know, that's another piece you can add in there. But then you can move Brad Boxberger out of that consistent seventh inning role and make him more of a bridge guy, perhaps. His flexibility can be versatile. One piece that I'm looking at in the minor leagues who's getting close to finishing up his minor league rehab assignment is Jake Cousins, too.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That could be a nice addition if he is able to get over this elbow issue. And by all accounts, he seems to be pitching well down there. You know, nice fastball, wipeout slider. That could be a really nice addition as well. So, yeah, it's a little bit dicier in the ninth inning without Josh Hader when he's pitching at the peak of his powers. But overall, I do think they just have more ways to go, more different buttons for Craig Counsell to push, and that's what he excels at.
Okay, I think we can finally start talking about the baseball from this past week, although I'm sure fans don't want to spend too much time on it. We talked about the ugly serendipity of Narvaez getting hurt the same day that the club announced that it designated Pedro Severino for assignment. It seems like his tenure in Milwaukee is over. They had to recall Mario Feliciano to get a second catcher on the roster. But also, I think the bigger issue, the offense has struggled at times this year. I think the defense has really struggled for most of the season, or at least seemingly. There's always a big play that seems to impact the outcome of a game. That certainly was the case Sunday. But I think the bigger problem, the pitching hasn't been great. You know, the Brewers came into Sunday, and Sunday was a good day for the pitching. Corbin Burnes was solid, 4.78 ERA in August. That's a small sample, but that's really high, obviously, 26th out of 30 teams. And if you're looking at July, they're 19th with a 4.04 ERA, tied for 19th with two other teams. And June is actually quite a bit worse by ERA. So this is not a team that has looked like a pitching powerhouse for a little while. And that's their calling card. You know, that's the thing that's supposed to separate them and make them a dangerous team in the playoffs. If the defense isn't good and the offense is spotty and the pitching is just okay, you know, I don't know what the Brewers have here that separates them from, you know, from the teams that they're competing with to try to get into the postseason. Do you have doubts about this pitching staff right now, or do you think that's a combination of injuries and guys who are going to be pitching better, you know, starters and relievers both? Like how do you look at this pitching right now?
Yeah, I think that's probably more it. You know, the injury bug started, you know, a bit real early on with Freddie Peralta. Brandon Woodruff goes next, and it just becomes kind of a musical chairs. Then Adrian Hauser goes down. You know, it's three obviously big pieces of that rotation that missed chunks of time, and pretty considerable chunks of time. Corbin Burnes has for the most part been terrific. Eric Lauer, I think, has been an unsung hero. You know, he's been a little bit inconsistent as well, but he's been an innings eater, and he certainly has not hurt the Brewers, not in the very least. You know, I would say 8-3 record, 3.59 ERA. That's pretty darn good for overall. You know, Aaron Ashby, he had that little stint on the injury list as well, but you're seeing kind of the growing pains with him. 2-10, 4.32 ERA, tied a career high in his last start Saturday with 5 walks. There's too much inconsistency with him right now. You know, Adrian Hauser is just starting a minor league rehab assignment. Freddie Peralta's already back. You know, you figure Adrian Hauser, a few more starts, he'll be back. Brewers, we talked with Craig Counsell a little bit about it on Saturday. He, of course, is non-committal because there's some time to go yet before it happens. But do the Brewers go back to a 5-man rotation with the original 5 guys and then move Aaron Ashby to the bullpen? I think there's a very strong likelihood there. And I think maybe Aaron Ashby is better suited right now to join the bullpen and pitch well out of the bullpen. And then you add him into the mix there, and all of a sudden that becomes an even deeper, more talented bullpen because he has pitched well in that role. So I think as Freddie gets stretched out, as Hauser comes back and hopefully is able to kind of regain his bearings, Brandon Woodruff has pitched much, much better since coming off the IL. I think you'll see the pitching kind of round into shape. Now, will there be enough time left at that point? That's the question. There's not a whole lot of time to be waiting around This has got to start happening quick. And, you know, what better week, I guess, than this week with, like I said before, Tampa coming in and then St. Louis.
Yeah, the team has lost 9 of its last 10 games that Aaron Ashby has appeared in. He's taken a loss in 7 of those. We saw him on Saturday, the second start in a row where he hasn't been able to get through 5 innings even. I agree with you. I think, you know, there's still so much. It's just a little erratic. You know, he's electric at times. And out of the bullpen, I think you're more likely to get those short spurts. But I'd also be curious to know what they do with Adrian Hauser. Hauser has also struggled this year. Maybe coming off the IL, you'll see a different guy similar to what you're talking about with Woodruff. But it's a challenge right now to kind of round out that rotation. They haven't been able to really land on one guy, this year. I think under normal circumstances, Freddie Peralta would be the story we're talking about first and foremost. The guy's back from the IL, I think, a lot faster than we thought. He didn't get to work too deeply into that game. Again, that was one of the Pirates games that the Brewers had a lead and ended up losing the lead. But he looked okay. He gave up a couple runs. Did you have any impression, any takeaway from how Freddie looked in his first start back against the Pirates? I think that would have been on Wednesday.
I'll be completely honest. I did not watch that game, so I can't comment. I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. I thought he looked good. He, you know, there's bound to be a little rust, but definitely doesn't look bothered, which I think would be the concern coming off of a long-term injury. You know, it's just this Pirates series, I understand why fans look at it and think this is a turning point. Baseball is impossible to identify true turning points in the moment. You really have to wait and see how it plays out before you, can sort of identify it. But, you know, these three lost leads on the heels of the trade deadline, you know, you got your three best pitchers on the hill and you lose all three of those games. You know, Matt Bush struggles, the bullpen struggles. You've got, you know, like I said, the other teams that are in contention with you are all winning at the same time. I could see why people really look at that as, you know, that's the moment that this season went bad. I guess for you, has this team fallen below the threshold of a playoff team? They're obviously out of a spot right now. I still think there's a lot of coincidence between the play on the field and what's going on with the trade deadline. But do you look at this team and think this is a playoff team, or do you think they have to now prove something that they are at that level?
I think they have to prove something. I really do. You know, it's incredible the fall that's taken place over the last 10 days, 8, 9, 10 days. And, you know, they find themselves out of the playoff picture altogether right now. But every area of the team has got to step up. To me, it starts with the offense. And like we talked about before, there needs to be more consistency. There needs to be more manufacturing. You can't rely on the home run all the time. It's just not going to work for you, especially in the playoffs. And they have guys that are capable of doing it. But for whatever reason, it's not happening. And then you move on to the rotation, like we talked about. There's guys there that need to step up. The bullpen, there's pieces that need to step up there. Defense has been a real wild card this year for this team. They have guys that can play, but then you get games like Sunday and, you know, guys like Colton Wong, who were, you know, one-time Gold Glovers, who right now are really struggling sometimes to even make the most routine plays. So I would say every area of this team needs tightening up. And again, time is running short. We're a little under 2 months to go. And if they're not able to figure this out in time and somehow they wind up being shut out of the playoffs, that's going to be a colossal fail on every level with this pitching staff, you know, this once in a generation type homegrown pitching staff coming into the season to be outside looking in. There's no way. I don't think anybody can accept that from the top on down.
Yeah, I've said this. I feel like it's hyperbole, but I don't think it is. Truly, it could be the most disappointing season in Brewers history. Not their fault, per se, because the expectations just weren't ever this high, that they were so obviously the favorite to win the Central. But to not meet that, you know, the Chicago White Sox are kind of going through a similar thing. You know, they're competitive. They're in the race, too. But the fact that they weren't running away with the Central at this point in the season is head-scratching to White Sox fans. It's the same for Brewers fans. You know, why aren't they running away with this? They've got these pitchers. But things just have not come together. All right, let's go to three up, three down. Easy as one, two, three. looking at some of the more granular details from the weekend. There's actually a lot left on the table to discuss, but I'm going to kick it off, Todd, and I'm going to talk about absolutely my favorite moment of the week. It came from their one win during the week on Friday night at American Family Field. Rowdy Tellez stole a base. Caught the Reds napping. It is his second career stolen base, his first attempt as a member of the Milwaukee Brewers since he came here last year. He is a large man. It was a glorious situation. He was very excited. The fans loved it. Gave him a great ovation. He had some great quotes afterwards, which you can read at jsonline.com if you have not already seen them. And I think this could easily be overstated, but you know, it is kind of nice in the throes of a very bad week and a very challenging time to be a Brewers fan and a Brewers player, I'm sure, to see a moment where guys just having fun. You know, it's a reminder that baseball, it's still a game and the guys really enjoy it and it's a kid's game and all that. And honestly, that's probably, as goofy as it sounds, the type of thing that can help ward off the bad vibes that come with a losing streak or come with just bad news after bad news. To have something as goofy as that, the Brewers win that game 5-1, and Rowdy Tellez stealing a base, man. I never thought I'd see it with my own eyes, but I did. Gosh, it was a beautiful moment, Todd. It was beautiful.
Well, you were also in the clubhouse, and you heard the quote after the fact about the meme with the hamburgers and hot dogs going into his mouth and everything. So,
so good.
Beyond the fact that it was just great to watch, it was still he takes it in the right vein, and he appreciates it too, and enjoys it, and you know, can laugh about it a little bit too. He's definitely one of my favorite guys to cover, one of my favorite personalities on this team. And, you know, I wrote about him yesterday. It's online today, and will also be in the paper. But just, you know, another one of those under the radar David Stearns moves that's panned out. Yeah, there's some chinks in his armor, and batting average could be a little bit higher. He's not the most mobile first baseman, but the guy's leading the club in many offensive categories. And, you know, he's going to, assuming he stays healthy the rest of the season, he's going to wind up probably around 30 homers and, you know, 85, 90 RBI. That's not bad. You'll take that from a first baseman, especially for a team like Milwaukee that has, you know, had a revolving door at that position for many years.
Let me feed you a question for the next on my list here. What the class AAA Nashville now has sort of a prospect studded group of guys there. First of all, there's a Story Ruiz guy just traded for in the Josh Hader deal. But Sal Frelick, Garrett Mitchell, Joey Weimer all called up to AAA essentially at the same time. Very reminiscent of what they did in previous generations, where you had guys like Corey Hart, Ricky Weeks, J.J. Hardy, Ryan Braun. Ryan Braun was a little bit behind those guys. Prince Fielder, though, in that first group, they kind of all started coming up together. And, you know, this offense needs reinforcements, and all these guys are at AAA. Now, they're not all mashing out of the gate, although Sal Frelick is putting up some pretty good numbers in his first limited sample of at-bats. So my question to you is, do you think one of those guys, or more than one of those guys, will be contributing still in 2022?
I my guess would be if we see any of these guys, it will be Ruiz. And just based off of that, or just, you know, that statement is based off the fact that he did debut for the Padres this year. And I think he is the most polished of that group. To me, if you look at the rest of that group, Sal Frelick is the guy that could see some time maybe next year quickly. If you know, it comes to that, who knows what kind of moves are made in the offseason. But he's got the kind of game that I think right now would fit the Brewers well. He's a contact guy, on-base guy. He's got speed. I don't know necessarily that he would be a center fielder at the major league level, but certainly could play some left field. Not quite sure about his arm, if that's strong enough for right field. But I think that Ruiz and Frelick, both of their game right now would complement the Brewers well, would suit the Brewers well. Garrett Mitchell, you know, tremendous athlete. He needs to show more consistency. He needs to be able to stay healthy. And the real wild card out of this group, and I would really probably most love to see in the majors, is Joey Weimer. But I think he also will eventually encounter the most difficulty in making that transition to the majors, just based off of his approach, his huge swing, and kind of the boomer bust hitter that he is. You know, That's not to say that his hit tool can't improve. That's not to say that, you know, he's not a guy that can't eventually become a consistent major league player, but he's really risen up the ladder fast. And to me, he seems like a guy that probably needs a little bit more time, a little bit more seasoning before we can start talking about him as a legitimate possibility.
All right. Do you have a number two for three up, three down, or are you counting that one?
I'll count that one.
All right, sounds good. So I'll go another direction here. A lot of celebrating going on this weekend. At American Family Field, the 1982 team was back for the 40th anniversary celebration on Friday. I thought that was really cool. I enjoyed talking to some of the players, seeing, you know, four Hall of Famers throw out first pitches was kind of cool. And then Saturday, Prince Fielder was back, getting inducted into the Walk of Fame. That's a pretty good feat. There's only 10 Milwaukee Brewers players who are in that Walk of Fame. There's 21 people overall, a lot of Milwaukee Braves, some executives, Bob Uecker's there. So that's a pretty prestigious group. It's very hard to crack that list. We've talked about it before. I've talked about it with Tom Hondricourt on previous podcasts ad nauseum, how more guys need to make the Walk of Fame. But Prince Fielder, kind of a no-doubt choice and selection. So he was back. Ryan Braun and Jonathan LaCroix were back as they were added to the Wall of Honor. I enjoyed that very, very much. Do you have a Prince Fielder moment that you witnessed or that you really particularly enjoyed from his time with Milwaukee?
I know I give you a hard time. You remember all this stuff with crystal clarity. Me, not so much, but I just remember, you know, my first year covering the Brewers was his last year with the Brewers in 2011. And what stuck out to me was really the calling card of his entire career with the Brewers was the consistency and just the everyday in and out. It just, there was, he was always there. He was always producing. He was always in the lineup. Just that rock, that stable force. And that cannot be underestimated. It was remarkable. You know, a guy with that, you know, that played that hard every day and just would never take no for an answer and made so many game changing plays. It was fun to watch. Did he ever have much to tell us or to say? No.
Still doesn't have a lot to say.
His speech was classic on Saturday, you know, basically like, oh, I'm really happy to be here. I'm really honored. Thanks. Bye. And I'm not kidding. That's really what it was. If it was 30 seconds, that was probably a lot, but that was typical Prince. And just a shame that his career ended the way it did with injury, because if had he been able to play several more years and produce the way I think we all think he probably would have continued to produce, we might be talking potential Hall of Fame candidate.
Yeah, absolutely. That neck injury certainly short-circuited that. But he does take his place among the Brewers greats. Ryan Braun will certainly be added to the Walk of Fame. I think it's 3 more years, maybe 4 more years. I'm not sure on like when the actual retirement date is. I think there will still be more conversation about whether the franchise retires his number 8. That is an interesting and challenging question when you look at his past in total. Unquestionably one of the greats in Brewers history as well. A couple more things. I'm going to go beyond my three up, three down scope here, just that I wanted to lob out there. On Saturday, we saw a really bad stolen base out call. At third base, Christian Yelich was called out in the first inning. These things, they do happen. I'm not going to like rail on the specificity of how bad the call was, but it was bad. And then replay upheld it. And I think, if I had to guess, the reason replay upheld it is because even though he was clearly safe on the initial tag, the tag was then held on Christian Yelich, and in the scrum of arms and legs, it's theoretically possible that he came off the base. Now, you can't see that for sure, but given that they tend to defer to the call on the field, they probably, I think the replay center just said to themselves, well, we can't tell for sure that he was safely on the base, so we have to go with the call that was made that he was, in fact, out. I think, Todd, there needs to be a stipulation. MLB wants more base stealing. They really are insisting on balls in play. I mean, they were talking about doing away with the shift. So stolen bases would fit into the ideal of what Major League Baseball wants more of. But it's completely disincentivized, because if you steal a base, physics have you just off the base for a split second. You know, that's an out. I think they need to at least put some stipulation in place where if you beat the tag, you get the benefit of the doubt if it's physics and the act of sliding, as long as you're not completely oversliding a base or making an action toward the next base, that you have got to be rewarded that base. Do you think that's just impossible, or do you think that's feasible? I mean, I got to think Major League Baseball wants to do that, don't you think?
Yeah, to me, the whole problem with this whole deal with replay is in that, you know, using this Yelich play as an example, everybody sees this replay on the board, multiple different angles, looks safe, and then comes back, the call is upheld, he's out. We need explanation from these people who are these umpires who are reviewing this stuff in New Jersey or New York, wherever the headquarters is out east.
Absolutely true.
We need them on the line to come to or at least to tell the umpire on site what the explanation was, because it just makes the replay system look like a joke when it looks everybody to the naked eye. Everybody's staring at that screen, seeing that Christian Yelich is safe, but then you're told, oh yeah, call was right, he's out. It makes a mockery of the system. And until they pull that curtain back and tell you what they're looking at and why they're making the call that they make, it doesn't work. You know, I would still say they get more calls right than they do wrong, but the ones that like the Yelich play that they clearly screw up, it just makes you shake your head and have less faith in the system than you did before.
Yeah, I agree with you. They get way more right than they get wrong, but there's too many wrong to justify a replay system that's supposed to weed those out altogether, the obvious misses. And to me, it was an obvious miss, but because there is the chance that he was off the base for a centimeter and we can't prove otherwise, they just went with it. And you're right. Give us the full-fledged explanation. You know, there was a play later in that game that the Brewers benefited from that they overturned, a caught stealing at second base. And honestly, I don't get it. I don't get why that one was overturned and Christian Yelich's was not. It's almost like customer service. It all depends on who answers the phone, and it colors the whole experience. You know, it's like there's just different people answering the phone and reviewing, and it feels very random. And yes, we need more information, for crying out loud, Major League Baseball. Find a way to make this work. And it's ridiculous that people are just left in the dark and left to speculate, and it's a mess. One last thought I did want to point out, because as we get closer here to the playoffs, the game 163, that's not happening anymore. That awesome moment against the Chicago Cubs in 2018, it was a good time. That's not part of the fabric of the postseason anymore. If the Brewers are tied with either, let's say, the Phillies or the Padres for a playoff spot, like the NFL, the playoff spot is determined by tiebreakers. In this case, the Brewers would lose both of those. They don't have the head-to-head series win with either San Diego or Philadelphia. San Diego is particularly a bummer of one, because I think they lost the last three games against the Padres to get into that spot and lose the season series 4-3. So when you're watching these standings, as you get down to the nitty-gritty here, keep in mind the Brewers have to finish a game ahead of these teams. They can't finish tied, or they will not get the benefit of the doubt. They will not potentially go to the playoffs, even if they have the same record as one of those teams for the last spot. Just wanted to throw that in. All right, let's go back in time just a little bit for Remember When. All right, Todd, I'll try to keep this short. It's kind of, it's a story a lot of people know. The 1982 team was here, of course. Very unpopular transaction was made. So let's marry the two and actually go back to 1992 when the Brewers elected not to bring back Paul Molitor. Do you remember anything from that moment when Sal Bando and the Brewers said, Paul Molitor, you can go ahead and go. We're not going to pay you what you want to make. And he went to Toronto. Do you remember that at all?
Oh, yeah, of course.
Yeah, it was a crazy time. Paul Molitor had made the All-Star team in 91 and 92. He was 36 years old, but he was healthy, and he was playing pretty well. He had signed, I think, in 1990 for 3 years, and it's so quaint, $9.6 million, three-year deal in 1990. But he said he wanted to stay. Sal Bando was in his first year as GM. He said initially that retaining Molitor was important, but there wasn't a lot of communication. Kind of a month went by after the season. Paul Molitor was still wondering why the Brewers hadn't reached out to him. Payroll was getting slashed from, again, quaint, $30 million to $22 million. The Brewers had some bad contracts on the books, and I think Bando, it seems like Bando just didn't believe designated hitter was that valuable a spot, and didn't want to offer him the same amount of money that he made the year before, offered him a pay cut. And I think it was going to be less than his $3 million salary from the year before. Molitor said no. The Brewers countered. It was still really low. Molitor was very flabbergasted. Kind of came down to the 11th hour before the arbitration. Arbitration was different then. This deadline, the Brewers did offer in arbitration a $4 million deal, but by then he had talked to the Blue Jays. He got a two-year, $9 million contract, ended up going to three-year deal, And he went to Toronto. And the Brewers were supposedly relieved that he wasn't going to take their money and make it more complicated for their books. Of course, he ends up, Paul Molitor ends up having a very good couple years with the Blue Jays. He makes two All-Star teams. He's World Series MVP. It does work out for him. The Brewers in 93, they go 69-93, have their worst team in a decade. Highly unpopular move. People still talk about it. Sal Bando was vilified for it. And Paul Molitor got the better end of it. I don't think that's what's going to happen with this deal. I don't feel like this is going to be something we talk about years and years from now. I just have a feeling about it, but who knows? This is definitely something people are, I would say, pretty fired up about as well. Okay, let's wrap things up finally, Todd, with our with your take of the week. It's Todd's take of the week. Take it away, Todd.
Ryan Braun sends it to left center and deep.
JR, I think the thing that's really going to jump out, the thing that's jumping out to me right now is looking ahead, because something Craig Counsell never likes to do. We could never ask him these questions Tuesday or Wednesday. Well, Wednesday we can, but not Tuesday. Looking ahead to the series in St. Louis, and we've talked about it earlier in this podcast, you have teams going in markedly different directions at this point in time. Brewers going the wrong way, the Cardinals going the right way, playing at Busch Stadium, a lot at stake. You know, we're talking about full games in the standings at that point, playing head-to-head. Cardinals, you know, hitting the ball all over the place. We all know about Goldschmidt and Arenado. A little bit different look, even though he was hurt. Harrison Bader has moved on. They've addressed their pitching staff, adding Jordan Montgomery. They've added the infamous Cy Quintana from the Pirates. You know, you can almost bet that he's going to be making a start against the Brewers every time the Cardinals play them the rest of the way. It should be a fun series, and I think it's going to be a very telling series for the Brewers. They need to win a couple of these games, I think, to kind of stop the free fall and grab a foothold and show that they definitely are going to be contenders the rest of the way.
Yeah, like I said earlier, I think that could be it for their season if they get swept. I mean, it's obviously way too early to really literally mean that, but that's a really huge flashpoint. And the Rays for two games, the Brewers have two off days this week. They have a chance to regroup. The Rays are a team that they played very well against in Tampa. They're coming to American Family Field, and then it's the Cardinals. You know, then there's the Dodgers. Like, the schedule in the immediate future is not easy at all. The overall schedule might be, but like I guess. I'd be worried that the Brewers fall way, way out of this in the next couple weeks, to the point that Trevor Rosenthal, when he comes back, isn't even pitching for a team in contention anymore. I don't think that's going to happen. I have faith that the Brewers will turn it around. But wow, is this going to be just a massive, massive week and massive 10 days of baseball for the Brewers as they try to get back into the National League Central. Todd, that's going to do it. I've got this Taylor Rogers interview to play as well. But thank you for joining me, sir. We are going to chat again next week. Take care, my friend.
JR, always a pleasure.
Indeed, it's always a pleasure. All right, Taylor Rogers, he is the guy that essentially is replacing Josh Hader on this roster, and he chatted with me for a little bit. He's from Colorado, went to the University of Kentucky. He's got a twin brother who pitches in the big leagues. You may know him. Well, we talked all about that. It's a short one, but here is my interview with Taylor Rogers. Thanks for tuning in, everybody. We will chat with you again soon. Bye-bye. My guest is Taylor Rogers, new Brewers pitcher, new Brewers left-handed relief pitcher acquired at the trade deadline, and I think the thing most people know about you, or that if I'm looking up anything about your high school career, I'm certainly finding this part about you, that you have a twin brother, he's in the big leagues, and my understanding is mirror twins? Is that a legitimate designation? And you guys are definitely fit that description, correct?
Yeah, mirror image. So we're identical, and if you look at me and you see him, it would be like looking in the mirror. I'm left-handed,
sure.
He's right-handed.
Yeah. And the handedness, I guess, for identical twins doesn't necessarily mean you're mirror twins, but in your guys' case, it definitely does. You guys are...
Yeah.
Indian, yeah, the right, you the left.
Contrary to popular belief, I hear this all the time.
Yes, I'm sure you do.
But we can be opposite-handed and still be identical twins.
Right, yeah.
It's legal.
Yes.
And the other part about it is it's kind of rare, and we can kind of make the rules how we want them.
Exactly. Taylor and Tyler, very similar names. I imagine that caused some problems growing up.
Yeah. Parents say it was... a coincidence that mom's side of the family picked a name, dad's side of the family picked a name, and it just so happened to be Taylor and Tyler.
All right.
I'm not sure how much I believe of that.
Yeah.
But presents some challenges.
Did you make it a point, because, you know, you go to Kentucky, he goes to Austin Peay, right? So was that important that you guys do something different, or was that just kind of how it naturally worked?
Yeah, that's just how it worked out. But in the end, that was the best. Because we were always doing stuff here. We shared a vehicle in high school. We shared a cell phone.
Like, yeah.
We had the same classes, so like it was good for us to branch out. Like it was good for me to get to Kentucky and just beat Taylor.
Yeah.
And not be which one are you or yeah. one of the twins.
Yeah, that's cool. Was there ever a chance? I mean, you being the lefty, I'm assuming not that you would go sidearm like he did. I mean, I don't know at what point he picked that aspect
no.
of.
Yeah, no, that's a story for another day.
Oh, it is. Okay.
Yeah.
All right, that's fine. So when you were able to get into a game with him before this earlier this season, how big of a deal was that for you guys? Was it just, you know, another day that people made a big deal about, or was that pretty cool?
No, that was cool for us.
Yeah.
You know, you look at the list, the 10 sets of twins, and
yeah.
kind of try to see, okay, and I think we were the fifth set to get to play in the same game.
So, yeah.
Anytime you can do something like that in baseball history, that's pretty yeah. cool.
So you're a Denver guy. Brewers used to have a AAA spot at Colorado Springs. I remember the big thing was pitching at altitude could screw with somebody's, mm-hmm. you know, screw with everything. You guys grew up with it. So does it feel different for you guys, maybe versus somebody who isn't used to having that in their lives from the different word go?
Growing up, you just don't know any different.
Yeah.
That's doesn't really matter then. But you know, I went over probably about 12 years without pitching in Colorado from the end of high school to the major leagues.
Yeah.
It's definitely a difference maker.
Yeah.
Even though from there and there's definitely a difference.
Yeah. How'd you end up at Kentucky coming from Colorado? Was it just who offered you? Or?
No Division I baseball in Colorado. Mm-hmm. So you gotta have to go somewhere. And
yeah.
and obviously, everybody that knows baseball, if you're going to go somewhere, go to the SEC.
Do you have a bourbon opinion since you spent a few years in Kentucky?
No, no.
No good bourbon opinions?
No.
All right. That's fine. So you were out of Kentucky when the Badgers beat UK in the Final Four.
Yeah.
I'm sure you were playing baseball. I don't even know if you had a chance to watch that game. But that's a very big moment in Wisconsin sports history. I'm imagining it wasn't as exciting for you on the other side of that.
No. I think that's the second time that's been brought up to me since I've been here.
Really? Oh, yeah. No. I didn't even think that anybody would touch on that already.
Yeah, Wisconsin's pretty proud of that one.
Yeah, so they are. I mean, fine. they didn't win, so everybody ends up in the same spot.
Right.
Were you a Broncos fan growing up? Because that would have been,
yeah.
when you were young, you would have seen the Broncos beat the Packers in the Super Bowl.
Yep. I remember that actually pretty vividly. And huge Broncos fan still now.
Yeah. Just the season, last one, the getting traded twice in one season. Not everybody has to go through that.
Mm-hmm.
I imagine it's still a little bit of a whirlwind, but how has it been for you?
There's no secret going through it, and you just know that it's time to play baseball, and getting traded the first time, you're like, okay, we're going to contender, and then get traded again, you're like, all right, we're going to another
contender. Yeah.
So at least we're have aspirations of playing some postseason baseball. So that's all you can ask for.